Hello and welcome to Virago Voices Podcast. This is the second episode of season 4 of the podcast. For those of you who are new to the podcast, Virago Voices is all about spotlighting inspirational women and their stories to empower and inspire other women and people. What a busy week it has been. This week, the UK saw the coronation of a new monarch, King Charles and Queen Camilla. And the coronation was like a real life episode of The Crown, which I'm currently watching and loving. Also this week, as I know my listeners love to hear about what I'm reading, I've just started reading In Defense of Witches by Mona Chollet. I think that's how you say it. She's French. Where I learned so much about the witch trials, which has actually been a fascinating insight into the lesser taught history. And the important message of the book is basically how women in today's society are still on trial if they don't abide by societal norms. If you know me, you know I'm a total bookworm, so I'm always happy to talk about book recommendations on my social media, and also happy to take book recommendations, so drop me a message if you've got any books you think I'll love. Anyway, slight sidetrack, but back to the podcast. If you've not listened to episode 1, this season is entitled Inspirational Women, and I will be asking my inspirational women on the podcast 3 questions with a little bonus question. So, without further ado, today's podcast is entitled Virago Imogen. I know Imogen again through LinkedIn, a slight trend in this season, and I came to know her through her own podcast called Med Synergy, where she'll actually be talking about in the podcast. Imogen is mature. She's actually currently an A-level student who's astutely researching what it is to be a medical student through getting medical students and doctors onto her podcast and interviewing them for the benefit of other students. How amazing. From Imogen, I've learned the importance of asking why in a way that doesn't actually detract from your ambition or passion for a subject through her work on her podcast. I hope you enjoy the conversation with the virago that is Imogen.
Hi, Imogen. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Hi, Victoria. It's great to be here.
Amazing. Well, yeah, thank you for being on the podcast. I'm super excited to have you here. And yeah, let's just get started. So the first question that I like to ask is, what is your life goal?
So this is quite a big question, isn't it? And I think life is big and people's lives are getting longer. And so thinking I could be living for another 70 years is quite scary. But in terms of a life goal, I literally asked my grandma this the other day, like, what do you think success is? And she said having goals and achieving them. So, you know, it is good to have these life goals. And I think I can only really think so far in the future, but just going straight in, I would absolutely love to be a heart surgeon one day. That is kind of my medical dream, wanting to go into medicine. I'd love to be a heart surgeon or a doctorpreneur, being a doctor and having something else on the side. I think that would really interest me because I like to have lots of different skills and I'm not good at just one thing. I like to try out different things, so I think that's something I'd really like to do in the future. But then just generally, and I think with those two things, just impact other people's lives and be able to improve their lives. And that's one of the reasons why I want to go into medicine, to improve people's lives, not just the one patient, but the patient's family, the patient's colleagues. Like, the impact you can have is absolutely insane. Like, it just really inspires me. And so another life goal, again, more generally, is I just want to keep learning. I'd never want to stop learning. And it sounds really like cheesy and cliche and geeky, but I do genuinely love learning most of the time. And so I wouldn't want to get to a point where I'm just really stagnant and not improving, not learning new things. So that's kind of a life goal. And then on another note, as a Christian, I have quite a strong faith side to my life goal. So I'd really like to grow close with God every day. That's kind of our goal, and ultimately bring other people closer to God as well. So as a kind of faith side, that's one of my life goals as well.
Amazing. I mean, there's so much there. I'm gonna just start with what you said about medicine. Firstly, so cute, your granny was just finding success and having goals and achieving that. So sweet. Grannies are the best. But yeah, this is really cool because you're not a medical student yet. You're still doing your A-levels, which I talked about at the in the intro. But so it's really nice that you've kind of got that. It reminds me of how I was before I started medical school. And not that I said that it changes, but it's lovely to see that you're so passionate about kind of impacting other people's lives. Why heart surgery?
Okay, so again, my granddad, who has passed away now, but about 20 years ago, he had a triple heart bypass surgery. And if he hadn't have had the surgery or survived the surgery, then I say this a lot, but it is such a cool story, to be honest, is if he hadn't have survived, my parents wouldn't have got married. And so I wouldn't have been born. So without that surgery, like, I wouldn't exist. So I think that's quite a cool thing to be able to say. And a lot of my family wouldn't be together or wouldn't have been born. So the impact you can have, and that's just because it was a heart surgery. If it was something else, I'd probably be interested in something else. But also just in biology and science, doing heart dissections and learning about the heart, it just makes my heart like skip a little bit faster. You know, it really interests me a lot more than some of the other aspects of biology at the moment. And we're actually doing a heart dissection on Monday, and I texted my family. I was like, oh my gosh, it gives me a reason to actually want to go to school, like actually having a heart dissection. It just really interests me, and you know, having that backstory is kind of a good reason.
Oh yeah, that's such a lovely story, and I love that kind of gives you that reason to keep going and to be passionate about something. No, I love that. That's so lovely. Thank you for sharing that. And then you kind of mentioned about trying different things. So not just being a doctor, which, you know, is great, but actually doing things outside of medicine. What kind of things were you thinking about there?
Well, all the jobs that I've ever wanted to do, medicine's the one that's kind of stuck the most, the one I've looked into the most, and seems to be the one that's going to happen. But the other careers I've looked into include like being a detective. I absolutely just love watching Sherlock and things like that. And everything to do with that is kind of problem solving. And I think, as I said, I just want to keep learning and keep discovering more. So anything to do with problem solving, really. But more specifically, in terms of being a doctorpreneur, potentially, with the podcast, I've now learned quite a few digital editing skills and obviously audio, video, social media. So anything around that, I think, you know, just developing new skills, trying new things. And I do really like to be outside, as we mentioned earlier. I really like kind of like the outdoors aspect. So just not doing one thing, just trying different things at the same time. I'd really like that flexibility.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And when you mention the podcast, explain the podcast to everyone listening, because it's so great.
Thank you. Yeah, so I started my podcast in September 2022, and it was just when I was starting my A-levels and I wanted something else to do, as if I didn't have enough already, but I wanted something else to do, and I wanted to explore medicine more. And having no medics in my family, I didn't really know how to do that. I didn't really have a starting point. So I think the best way to explain it really is, if you ask someone, can I have a 15-minute chat, they'll often kind of just brush you away and it's like, no, who are you? I don't want to talk to you. Say, do you want to come on my podcast? They're a lot more interested, and that's what I found. So I just got a few people together, did the first few recordings, and then it's kind of grown from there. Just asking people how to get into med school, how to become a doctor, and look at the realistic side of a medical career, because in the media at the moment it's very negative, and then medical dramas, it's kind of a worshipped career. And just like, no, I want to get to the bottom of this, I want to find the reality. And that's kind of why I started it, and now more and more people are listening to it. So I'm looking at other careers around medicine as well, like being a doctorpreneur or health tech or being an arm doctor, all these other things as well.
Amazing. So I guess that kind of love of detective work is kind of coming through here in the podcast, because you're kind of trying to get to the bottom of this question that you have, is should I study medicine, I guess, is your question. And I just love that you're asking these questions, but you're kind of making it accessible for other people who are also asking those questions. Is that quite important to you?
Yeah, I think so. I just think if I'm learning all this stuff, it's just an added bonus if other people can learn from it too. And I think, again, with that realistic side of it, that's what people have found most helpful, because you can look up medical schools and you can find out what the people think about them online, but it's kind of getting to the people who are actually there, the people actually experiencing it, what they think, what the reality is, and yeah, learning from real people to teach real people how to do it. Again, lots of people don't have medics in their family, or they're from widening participation backgrounds, so yeah, just helping other people that can't access those resources as easily.
Yeah, and I was going to say that from a kind of widening participation perspective is really helpful, because you're giving people the tools that they need to make informed decisions about what they want to do in the future, which is incredibly inspiring. And I think, you know, I completely kind of think that what you're doing is amazing. So well done for that. I'm sure everyone listening will also think that too.
Thank you. I mean, yeah, that's why I started it, just to get other people learning. And yeah, that's why I did it, basically.
Yeah, no, amazing. And what's the kind of long-term goal of the podcast?
A lot of people ask me this, and it's quite a tricky one, because I have only been running it for 6 months, and I don't know if in another 6 months I'm going to be stressed out with A-levels, UCAT, personal statement, all these kind of things. But the beauty of a podcast is you can kind of front load it. You can record loads in advance and schedule them to go out and not really have to worry about it too much. So I think hopefully I'll be able to carry on at least up until when I go into med school, if I do end up doing that. And then we'll see what happens from there, because I might think I'll let someone else carry on, or I'll change the content a bit more to specifically med students, but we'll see. But definitely the next 6 months I like to carry on and help other people while I'm going through the journey as well.
No, that sounds so amazing, and it sounds like the skills you've gained, I mean, I know as a podcast host as well, like the skills that it takes to record a podcast aren't just having the conversation, it's so much more. And I guess digital health is such a booming sector at the minute. A lot of those skills will be transferable. So can you see yourself kind of going into digital health and using these transferable skills?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And as I said about also being a doctorpreneur, going back to that and having all these other skills, other things you can do, I think it's really nice to have other skills. And in terms of digital health, I've been to quite a lot of health tech events now, and looking into health tech companies and what they do and what the skills are needed for that. Definitely it's something that interests me. And with digital health, something that's quite cool is that you can impact potentially a lot more people than if you're just in a clinic. And as I said, you can impact a lot of people, but you could impact people on a population scale in digital health or health tech. And I think that's pretty inspiring. So that's definitely something I'd be interested in going into for that reason.
Yeah, and that's so commendable. That's a great kind of motivating factor for going into digital health. You mentioned doctorpreneur a couple of times. Do you want to kind of explain to listeners what that means?
Yes, I think it's a word I haven't actually heard that many people use it before. I saw one person use it. I was like, right, I'm running with that. I love that. And so it's doctor, entrepreneur, and some people would say clinical entrepreneur, that kind of thing. I've just merged two words together. But it's basically, and also you could say it's a portfolio career potentially as well. Some people have that. So it's either being a full-time doctor and having a side hustle during your non-working hours, or being part-time and then part-time something else. So a lot of people now are either being a clinician and then having a small company that they're trying to start up, a health tech startup or something like that. And then some people transition to part-time work while building this business on the side. And I think something like that's pretty cool, because as you know, with junior doctor strikes at the moment, you're not necessarily paid a lot at the start. And so it's good to have that kind of side hustle to support you a little bit more than just a doctor's salary, as it were.
Yeah, and that's amazing. And that's so nice that you have that flexibility as well, that you can kind of do clinical work, but also do this other thing that you're kind of passionate about, like the podcast or health tech. So yeah, no, that's really cool. I love it. Doctorpreneur. And you were saying you, back to the original question, I've kind of diverged here, but that you want to keep learning. And I guess there's a lot of humbleness to that, to be able to identify that you kind of won't ever know everything and that you'll always learn something. I guess, how do you envision yourself kind of keeping that passion alive?
Well, a lot of people say that when they're in med school, obviously you're doing a degree, so hopefully you're learning something. But carrying on, especially now with the rate of change that's happening around us, like, you've got to keep up with it, and if you don't, you're just going to get left behind. So I think in terms of that, and technology as well, just generally in life, not necessarily to do with medicine, the world is changing so rapidly, so you've got to learn to be able to keep up with it. And so I think it's kind of like that, really, learning to just keep up with the rate of change and all the new things that are happening. But also, being a doctor, going back to the medical side a bit, there are new technologies, but also I think you have new experiences. I can imagine you have new experiences. So one day you might see a patient and the way they respond to something you tell them just changes the way you think about something, changes your perspective. And I really like that you're engaging with lots of people and you're having lots of, not influences, but you're not just looking at yourself, you're looking at other people and seeing their reactions and seeing that how they process things. And so that kind of helps you learn more about people. Trying to see where I'm going with this, give me a sec. You're learning about people, but you're also, you can learn about yourself through that as well, see how different people respond, and see, you can learn from other people's life experiences, I think, where I'm trying to go with this. You can learn from other people. And I think that's a really cool thing that you can do with medicine, because there's a lot of people ahead of you. And so you can learn from them, and you can learn also, again, the new technologies and all the new things that are coming in.
Yeah, I love that. And I think you're spot on. I think learning from the experiences that you have, you know, day to day with patients. I think that's why we reflect a lot. And I actually really like reflecting now, after a bit of a tenuous relationship with it at the start. I think I do a lot in my head anyway, but I think it's really important to kind of reflect on things that went well, things that didn't go well. And I think actually reflection on things that did go well is really helpful, because you can be like, this is what I did well, this is what I want to maintain. I'm currently reading Rebel Bodies by Sarah Graham. Have you read it?
No, I haven't, but I think I've heard of it.
Yeah, well, so it's all about how women are kind of not valued or not believed in medicine. And it's very much from a perspective of a patient and looking at how doctors kind of treat patients. And a lot of it's making me examine my own clinical practice and a lot of the biases that I might hold, and actually it makes you quite vulnerable as a clinician, because you're like, do I do that? Do I say these things? And you're right, this constant learning that doctors have to do is really important. And I'm definitely experiencing it in the minute, reading this book. I'm like, gosh, this is really valuable lessons. And it's all from like patient feedback and things. So yeah, no, I think you're spot on there.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, you can read books as well. You can learn how to change the way you approach patients. And I think that's really nice, just the flexibility and how you can adapt with it.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think you're right, reading books is really important, because I don't think that these lessons have to necessarily come from the people who experience them. It's our responsibility as doctors, but also as humans, to understand what's going on in the world. I think there's not really an excuse for ignorance. And I think when people are ignorant of problems, that's kind of inexcusable, because there's so many resources out there that you can go and read a book about whatever issue you feel that you're ignorant about. So I think that's really important. And it's lovely that you're going into medicine with that belief that you always learn. It's really good to see.
Thank you. Yeah, as I said, I'm just at the very start of my journey, so I don't fully know what's ahead of me, but that's why I started the podcast as well, just learn as much as I can about the future. And so, as you say, not going into it ignorant, knowing full well what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah, and that's really commendable, because a lot of people will bury their head in the sand. So I think what you're doing and making informed choices is really brave. So well done for that. And yeah, our next question is, what would you tell 16-year-old you? Which is a really exciting question for me because you're 17, so it's only a year ago. But actually, I think you'll probably have a lot to say. So let's go for it. What would you tell 16-year-old you?
Yeah, I did find it funny when you sent me this question because literally 4 weeks ago I was 16. So what would I tell myself? Probably wear a different coat the day after or something. But I think the reason why people ask questions like this, what would you say to your 16-year-old self, is what do you wish you'd learned earlier? And that's kind of the reason why you're asking. So even though I haven't had loads and loads of years after being 16, it's only been less than 4 weeks. But I think... I think, as I said before, what would I say to my 16-year-old self? Learn from other people's mistakes. Like, try to, obviously you can learn a lot from your own mistakes, but you can minimize them if you learn from other people's and learn from other people and see kind of what went wrong there. How can I avoid doing that? Because you don't want to make loads of mistakes just to learn from them if you can learn from other people's. I think that's what I've kind of gained from reading all these different books as well. And we also mentioned it a bit there, learn to adapt. Like, I, as I said before this podcast, I've only ever been at a school for 3 years or less, so I've had to kind of learn to adapt with that, and I've probably found that quite tricky. So something I would suggest to my younger self is just learn to adapt, just be really flexible, and it's not necessarily comfortable, but you just need to kind of go with it. And I'm talking to people on my podcast, they always say going into med school or going into foundation years, you have to adapt to how you're living, how you're revising, and just be prepared for everything to change and it be a bit messy for the first few weeks, and then just go with it and yeah, adapt and change and see what sticks, basically. Another thing, yeah, definitely, you never know what someone else is going through. That's what I'd say to my younger self, my 16-year-old self, because especially when you're a teenager, I think you can be very inward looking. Mm-hmm. I still am, even at 17, I'm not saying I'm not. You can just think, oh, you know, look at me, I have it so hard and this is what's happening in my life. And you don't realise other people have it really bad and it can be a lot worse than what you're going through. And obviously that doesn't make how you're feeling or what you're going through any less valid, but it's just like, it isn't all about you. Just think, you know, somebody could be having the worst time of their life and you will not know it. So just treat them, you know, nicely. And again, teenagers, they can be really horrible. So just try to break that pattern. I think that's what I would say to other 16-year-olds as well. Like, don't follow the pattern of just being horrible to people for the sake of it. Like, try to be nice, because again, you don't know what they're going through. And, you know, one little hello, how are you doing, you know, ask twice, ask if they're all right. That doesn't cost you anything, isn't going to make you like exhausted after doing it. It's just one little thing. And I think, you know, just be nice. It's quite a simple thing, but I think at 16 it's quite easy to forget.
Definitely. No, I love that. I mean, you said that it's kind of a thing that happens when you're 16, but actually I think be nice to people. I mean, I still come across people and I'm 28 who aren't nice, and you're like, wow, it doesn't cost anything, as you said. And I think particularly with the current kind of climate and with COVID happening, that's really come into the media of like being kind to people. And you're right, you kind of never know what anyone else is going through, and no one knows what you're going through either. So just being kind to people is really important. I love that.
Yeah, definitely. I've just seen it at the different schools I've been to, as I said, being adapting. Like, people just choose to be nasty. And it's like, why are you doing that? It's a bit silly, but yeah, I'm sure some people just don't ever get out of that pattern. So that's why I'd suggest to people, try and break that pattern early, try and get out of that cycle of just being nasty.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And I think what you said about learning from other people's mistakes, I think that's there's a lot of kind of intelligence there, because you kind of have to look at the person's mistakes, reflect on it, and then make a plan of how you're not going to do that. And I think that's a very mature thing to do, and something that not a lot of people who aren't, you know, are over 16 or 17 do as well. Everyone kind of thinks, oh, I have to make this mistake through my own learning, but actually you're right, if someone's made that mistake and you can recognize it and change your behavior to not make that same mistake, then why would you not do that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I have all these like self-help books, and it's literally just a library of where people have gone wrong and then sorted out. So just get that. You really don't need to make your own mistakes, because that can get messy. Just learn from other people's.
Yeah, and I guess that's again what we were talking about with educating yourself, and it's like, just educate yourself on every topic and use your self-help books and learn from them.
Yeah, definitely.
And yeah, definitely adapting. I definitely agree with that. I feel like adaptability is something that is actually quite a hard skill to hone. And we all, as humans, kind of get comfortable, don't we? It's a very human trait to want to be comfortable. And actually that adaptability is really important. How do you think you become more adaptable?
I think with practice, which is hard, because if you haven't had very many opportunities to change, then it will be hard. I can imagine that if you've been in a very similar situation most of your life. For example, one of my friends at college, she's been homeschooled her whole life, and so this is the first 6 months she's ever been in normal state education, and so obviously it's going to be hard for her to adapt, and it can be hard for other people to be around someone who hasn't quite adapted yet. And if you haven't had that, that's going to be hard. I appreciate that. But I think probably being open-minded that you don't necessarily know what you're going into when that change does happen. Just being open to try different things. As people say on the podcast, like I mentioned, they say when you change stages in the medical journey or things like that, you have to change the way you revise or change the way you approach different things. And so having an open mind and trying different things, you've got to try a few different things, see what works, see what sticks. For example, with revision, mind maps might have worked at GCSE, and now you have to do something else, past papers at A level, and you don't know that unless you try that out. So yeah, a bit of trial and error, a bit of practice, a bit of see what works, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. And again, just giving things a go and seeing how they go, and being open to that is really important, definitely. And then one of my favorite questions, what does being a woman mean to you?
Okay, so this also a bit of a strange question, because I don't feel like a woman, like a woman's such a, you know, big, proper, mature person. I feel like, I feel like it's a tricky one for me, because I don't consider myself as like a fully grown woman, as it were, but as a female, as a girl, I think, as you've kind of touched on slightly before the podcast, for example, being a heart surgeon or being a surgeon, it's something like 1 in 7 surgeons are women. And so for me, that's kind of me being a woman. It's not being intimidated by that necessarily, but it's being challenged by that and kind of seeing it as an opportunity to challenge and push and try to change that. And I think that's something quite cool, being a woman today and in the 21st century, not being like, okay, well, that's what it is, I'm limited to that. It's kind of breaking the boundaries, that kind of thing, and changing what it is and making it better.
I love that. I really love that. Well, firstly, I think you're very mature. For, you know, when I was 17, I definitely wasn't this mature. So for me, you're very mature. But you're right, you're not fully grown, you know, and I don't think anyone ever feels like they're fully grown. I still don't, and I'm, you know, 28. But I love that about kind of creating change. And, you know, I'm of a different generation to you, and I feel like my generation are so passionate about making, well, I'm so passionate about making the the world a better place for all the women behind us. And I'm so glad that that's trickled down to the generation below me. So you guys, like, I love that you're passionate about making change and that you see statistics as an opportunity and a challenge rather than something that limits you. And I guess we all stand on the shoulders of each other and of the giants that came before us, who trailblazed the way for us to even be in medical school or even dream of going to medical school. I mean, we're so privileged in that sense. And I know we still face loads of challenges and we often feel completely privileged, and there's lots of women that face so many other barriers than we could ever experience. But it's so exciting that that's how you feel, and I loved hearing that. I guess, is there anything, I don't really like asking this question, but is there anything that does kind of daunt you about going into something that's kind of classically male dominated like surgery?
I think the reason why the statistics so low for women being surgeons is because when you go out of medicine to have a family, you kind of get left behind because technology moves on. And as I said earlier, it moves at such a fast rate now. If you take 2 years out, that's it. It'll take you quite a while to retrain. And so sometimes they just change their job completely or a bit further behind the male surgeons who joined the surgery specialty at the same time. And so it doesn't scare me, but obviously having children is quite a natural part of a lot of women's journeys through life. And so it's kind of, a lot of women feel they have to make a decision between having a family and carrying on their career. And again, it doesn't scare me, but it's just, it's interesting. It's something to consider. Like, I hope in the future people don't necessarily have to choose between the two, that you'll be able to do them together. I think that's probably what I'd say on that.
Yeah, I would love to see that in our generation, you know, in the next 10 years, that that's not something that we ever think about. You know, are you going to have kids? Well, yeah, of course. I mean, I get asked that all the time when people are like, oh, you want children, Gani, but don't you want to have a family? And I'm like, yeah, but I want to do both. Like, is that not a thing? Why are we living in a world that's designed for men only? And that's great. But I guess what I would say on that one is, do you have any role models in the field of surgery or generally in medicine that you kind of look at and you're like, I want to be like them, not like an idol, but a role model?
Well, with the podcast, I obviously have a lot of people that I follow on LinkedIn or Instagram. And they're mainly medical students, so they're not really far ahead, and no surgeons in that sense. So I don't really know any surgeons who I look up to as role models. So maybe that's something I should go and do. But yeah, I have a fair few role models. But again, they're all quite young. They're kind of early 20s. So, you know, no, I would say no, I don't have that many role models or enough.
Yeah. And I guess, again, looking at the field in surgery and seeing yourself in a consultant, for example, is really important. Do you kind of, because I know what my answer to this would be, but do you look at the field of cardiothoracics and see people that look like you and see a life that you want to have?
Yeah, I do see people, obviously, and I do follow them. And also, you know, medical dramas, cardiothoracic is quite a common one that everyone has. But in terms of like real actual, because again, if you don't know any medics, then you are going to get a lot of your information from the TV. But even real ones, Surgeons at the Edge of Life, I think it's a BBC one. And so they do a lot of surgeries and things like that. Like, I'll see that. And that's always interesting. I do see myself doing it. I don't see it as too big of a mountain, and maybe I don't know all about it. I don't know the full journey to get there. I know it's gonna be really hard, but I'm not scared by it. As I said, like, I see it as a challenge. I'm like, okay, well, that's a goal. We'll see if we get there, and I'll work hard to get there. So that's kind of where I'm at the moment.
No, I love that. I think that's so great. And there are so many amazing women that are sitting and pioneering the way. Have you heard Scarlett McNally is incredible. She always writes and she's been writing in the BMJ recently. So check her out, definitely. But yeah, no, I love that that's kind of giving you the, you know, the motivation, the drive to make change. And yeah, these trailblazing women are just amazing. And I think in the next 10 years, the change that we'll see in society, but also in medicine, will be incredible. And I'm so excited that we're going to be part of that.
Yeah, definitely. It's great to see what these women ahead of us are doing, and then think, what can we do in the future when things start to change even more? Like, the possibilities are going to be really, really cool.
Yeah, no, endless. And it's amazing to see. And I guess this links us in quite nicely to our final kind of question. This is my new question on the podcast. So what change do you want to see to make the world a better place for the next generation?
So this is a huge question. We could probably talk about this for hours. Come on, book on it. But I guess in relation to what this podcast is about and supporting women and inspiring women, a change I'd love to see is, again, as I said, people being able to have a career and have a family and not have to choose. I think that's something I haven't really considered about, but just talking through it now, it's such an important thing, and it's sad that people have to choose. So, you know, I think that's a change I'd like to see in terms of women in medicine. And let me just have a little think.
Yeah, no, I think that is fantastic in itself, because so many, I've seen it, you know, when I've been working in the hospital, that, you know, you always feel that women who have children, and not so, and sometimes men, but not so much, have to kind of make that decision and, you know, go down to part-time and do other things. And I do think it's because we've built a society around a male model, whereas things like with COVID, working from home suited women so much better, because they were able to do some more of their kind of caring duties from home. I guess it put more work on them because they were at home, but it gave them the flexibility that they potentially required to perform at their job and also not feel that they're constantly divided. So that's an amazing, I would love to see that too.
Yeah, and I mean, even if it's not having children, because not everyone wants children, not everyone can, it's also like looking after your parents. So I can see my mum looking after her parents, and, you know, that does can often fall down to the daughters or the wives of the family, not always, but, you know, generalising. And I think just, or doctors in general, being able to look after their siblings, parents, other relatives, and having these other responsibilities, because we talk about this a lot on my podcast, actually, you're not just a doctor. Mm. Like, that is, it is a big part of you, of course, but that's not, you're not just that, you're also a family member as well, you're a friend, so you do have these other things. And I think being a doctor is always going to be time consuming, it's always going to be a big part of your life, as I said, but, you know, still being able to have that time to look at other things and do other things, not even helping other people related, just doing what you enjoy, I don't know, windsurfing, having the chance to do other things, you know.
Yeah, and I think what we're talking about here is work-life balance, because for so long, and I think the kind of past view was that, yeah, as you said, you were defined by being a doctor and, you know, your work was everything, and then when that kind of falls apart, you kind of lose that identity. Whereas, yeah, your work-life balance is so important, and I'm so glad that that's at the forefront of your mind as a prospective medical student who's going to be a doctor one day, and, you know, you're going to pioneer people having work-life balances.
Yeah, definitely. And actually, with that, I think another thing I'd like to see change, just having to think about it, is I do love the idea of technology, and me and my dad talk about it a lot because he's quite a gadget geek, but I do really like the idea of technology. However, I do kind of wish that in the future people wouldn't rely on it so much. For example, social media, like, it has so many positives, but seeing so many of the negatives, and also, not even if there's anything directly negative. Just spending 4 hours a day on it is not great. So I kind of hope, I'd quite like to see a change where people move back more back into nature. And that sounds really wishy-washy, but just like seeing the effect it has on me when I spend a lot more time on my phone watching television, like I kind of hope people would realize the benefits of just, you know, going for a little walk, windsurfing. That's the answer to everything now, but you know, doing other things and not just being on your phone. I think that's a change I'd quite like to see, because you see these little toddlers with iPads, and I'm sure that's a very like convenient, easy way to get them to just be quiet, but at the same time, like, it'd be really nice to not see that, to kind of go back to when that didn't happen.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And actually, I feel like that would make the world a better place if we weren't kind of so reliant on social media. And I mean, I'll totally, if I ever have a toddler, I will probably shove them the phone, because I get it when they're like screaming the house down and you're like, okay, fine, have the phone. But I know what you mean in terms of getting into nature and making sure that we're outdoors, and you kind of get that natural rush of dopamine and endorphins rather than the kind of artificial one that you get on social media. I agree with that. I really like that, actually. I never even thought of that one.
Yeah, because if I heard someone else say that, I'd be like, oh, that's so wishy-washy, you know, nature. But at the same time, like, it does kind of not upset me, but we talk about this a lot as a family, as I said, just seeing the effect it can have always being on your phone and always doing the things that being on the phone brings, and also having with that instant gratification. I talk about that a lot. That's also another thing linked with it. Having that instant gratification is really great, and it helps us in so many different ways. But I think we need to learn to have that patience and go back to more natural ways. Not all the time, but you know, just have those pockets of going back to natural life, I think.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think probably hopefully we'll see that, because technology's boomed so much and we've kind of relied on it for everything, especially during COVID, and that was amazing that we were able to do that. But actually finding technology's place in our society and finding where it's not appropriate, and when actually the old kind of go out and play with your friends is kind of a better way of doing things. I really like that. I think that's a great one.
Yeah, you summed it up nicely there. I think I was waffling a bit, but you summed it up really nicely. Like, when you're meeting up with people, don't just stay on your phone for half an hour, like, actually have a conversation. I think, yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at, really.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. But I do think technology is great, and I know you're a big advocate of kind of health tech and things. Technology definitely has its place, but there are times when we just need to get back into nature and the olden days, as I like to say, but... my mum would be offended by that. but yeah, no, that was a lovely note to end on, even though anyone listening to this is on a device listening to this podcast, but skimming over that. Go have a walk afterwards. No, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It was an absolute pleasure to interview you and just meet you and see kind of the future of women and the future of medicine. So all the best for applications to uni. You'll make the right decision. I just know you will. Go with your gut, and good luck for your heart dissection on Monday.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really excited for that and excited to see what the future holds. And yeah, thank you again for having me on the podcast. It's been really, really lovely.
No problem at all. And give Imogen a follow on, is LinkedIn the best or Instagram?
LinkedIn, Imogen Ayres, and Instagram, The Medicinity Podcast.
Yeah, and give your podcast a listen, because it's great. So yeah, it was lovely to meet you. Thank you so much.
No worries. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of the podcast. Next week, I am back interviewing another inspirational woman. Her profile will be revealed on the podcast Instagram this upcoming week, so stay tuned. My Instagram handle is @virago_voices. As always, if you have any questions about anything that this episode has covered, please DM the Instagram or tag us in your stories. I will endeavour to answer your questions on the next episode. Also, remember to give Imogen and MedSynergy a follow. The information is in the description of this podcast. Thank you again for tuning in. If you like this episode, please consider sharing it on your social media or with a friend. Remember to subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on and leave a review if you have a minute. Thank you again and see you next week. Bye.